I am Gary Jobson, and welcome to American Sailing Stories. Our guest today is Stan Honey, the most successful offshore navigator of the modern era. He's a methodical thinker who uses every source of information available. Consider this partial list of his victories as navigator on a wide variety of boats on all oceans across the world. The Sydney Hobart Race, Bermuda Race, the Admiral's Cup, Chicago Mackinac Race, Miami Montego Bay, the Pacific Cup, record-breaking circumnavigation aboard Group Bama in 2010. He did that in 48 days and 7 hours. The fastest 24-hour run aboard PlayStation, 687 miles. He's navigated the Trans-Pacific Race 22 times, winning class or claiming line honors in 11 of those races. He's had the fastest 24-hour run in a monohull, 547 miles. He's won the Southern Ocean Racing Conference. He was first in a single-handed race in the Trans-Pacific to Hawaii. And he was a navigator on the winning boat in the 2005-2006 Volvo Ocean Race. He's also married to Sally Honey, a two-time Yachtswoman of the Year. Stan grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area and attended Yale University and went on to get a master's in electrical engineering from Stanford University. In time, he became a chief technology officer for News Corporation. In sports television, he's most noted for creating the yellow first down line that you see in every football game that's broadcast these days. Stan Honey's come a long way since his early days racing dinghies around San Francisco Bay to being one of the most sought-after navigators in the world. It makes you wonder, how did he migrate himself from the small boats to the big boats?
It turns out I was big boat sailing from the time I was a teenager, and oddly, I was interested in navigating from the time I was 12, 14. So by the time when I was 14, I was racing lasers and active in dinghies, but also I was navigating offshore races. And at the time, it was all celestial. And I was interested in the complexity of it and the mathematics, and that my father had been a navigator. So that interested me. And my godfather had been a V-17 navigator. So I was interested in this kind of the lore and the art of it. And then it was, and then as sailing, as navigation and sailing got more technical, it became even more interesting to me because I was interested in things technical as well.
Thanks to GPS tracking, we can follow boats as they race long distances. My question is, what do you do to get ready for a long distance race?
The real secret is preparation. I just work really hard at making sure all the gear on the boat's perfect, that the polars are very accurate, that I have all the best sources of information. And I, you know, the goal I set for the morning of a start is to have nothing else that you can imagine that you could do if you suddenly had a timeout and had another day or two to spend, that you've checked all the boxes. And, you know, that was sort of the criteria I would set for each of the legs in the Volvo as well, is to try to have it to be so well prepared that the day or so before the race, there was nothing you could think of to do other than just sort of monitor the weather as it progressed.
One of the curious things about following Stan Honey as he raced in the Volvo Ocean Race was how he would split away from the rest of the fleet to avoid a bad pressure system to get into new wind. The other boats would not follow him, and at times he looked like he was well behind, and then miraculously would find good wind and take the lead.
I think that happened 5 or 6 times in the Volvo, and it happens almost every time you're going around a high. And that's one of the most difficult things for the navigator. And that's, of course, the dominant tactic for the transpac, is getting around a high. But in those situations where you're rounding a high, you're often in the situation where you've got to sail extra miles. You've got to invest in order to later get the benefit of the fastest course.
When you're out in the middle of the ocean, navigating is certainly an intellectual exercise. But on these high-speed boats, you're pounding hard, it's wet, you're going fast. In fact, I would describe it as a violent atmosphere.
You just have to put it out of your mind. And it does slow you down some when it gets really rough, just because the energy it takes to stay in the nav station and the energy it takes, you know, to operate the mouse. And there are times when it's so rough, it's just really difficult to even operate the computer because you're being tossed around so much. But you just have to do the best you can. And then you've got to put the physical comfort out of the equation altogether. Because in a Volvo, you know, you're just cold and wet and hungry, you know, the entire time.
Seasoned navigators will tell you that finding the correct route is both an art and a science.
I don't know if it's art or judgment, but you're definitely, you do as much as you can with science and engineering, and then it takes some judgment, almost like in a, you know, the business world, where you're having to weigh your decisions based on, you know, the assessment of risk associated with each decision.
In 2010, Stan was honored as U.S. Sailing's Rolex Yachtsman of the Year for his performance as navigator on Groupama. This was a French multi-hull that went around the world setting a new course record nonstop in 48 days. The skipper was Frank Camas, a famous Frenchman who's fearless out on the water. Honey was the only American with this French crew.
It was really interesting. It was a huge honor because the French offshore community is this very closed group, and they're really good at what they do. And so it was a great honor to be asked in. I hadn't spoken French before. I'd studied Spanish and grew up in California, and so knew Spanish pretty well. So I took a course at Stanford in French, and I had studied with a tutor, and I was thinking I was going to be pretty good with French. And then I get on the boat, and the guys all talk softly. And as you know, I don't hear very well. And they all talk at the same time. And so it was very difficult for me to understand what was going on. And I did get to the point that when the guys were talking socially, by the end of the trip around the world, I could work out whether they're talking about boats or women. So I had that sorted out. And I could understand what was going on when one of the guys would be talking to me. And I got a little bit better. And I got to where I could give the forecasts and the sailing directions in French. But it was a great experience with the guys, and there was a very experienced crew. Frank was the youngest guy on the boat, and Frank knew that the most important thing about the Jules Verne is you have to finish. And 9 of the last 10 failures to set the Jules Verne failed because the boats broke. So what Frank did is he found a crew of very experienced senior guys, none of whom were hot rods, and so guys that he knew, you know, could get the boat around the world without breaking it.
The goal when you're racing around the world to try and set a record is to sail as fast as you can. But in powerful winds and big waves, you also have to avoid breaking down, which has been a big problem for many circumnavigators over the years. Sometimes you just have to throttle back.
One of the jobs that Frank gave me was to sail around the world in less than 35 knots of wind. And you can actually, it sounds ridiculous, but you can actually do it. The boats are so fast that you can pick your weather. You can skip from system to system. You can pass a front from the front to the back. And so for the navigator, it's really interesting, the navigational job, because you have so many more options than you could normally consider in a sailboat race because of the speed of the boat. But the boat performs best in flat water below 25 knots. From 25 to the low 30s, you know, it's okay. And then above 35, it's really one to avoid, and you really got to slow down. And so, but you have all this speed to use as a tool. And so what, you know, I would do is I'd use that speed in order to buy the weather we wanted, which is the flat water, kind of 20 to 25 knots. And in that condition, the flat water to 20 to 25 knots, you'd let her rip. And the boat would just perform astonishingly well.
Stan was inducted into the Sports Broadcaster Hall of Fame in 2017. He's had a tremendous impact in football with his yellow line, the strike zone in baseball, track and car racing, and probably his most challenging sport, sailing.
The key benefit that this sort of augmented reality technology brings, and what I mean by augmented reality is the systems that we've built for hockey, baseball, football, motorsports, where you can insert graphics into live video showing where things are that are hard to see. The benefit that technology brings to a sport is most appropriate if the sport has things that are really important but hard to see. So in football, the first down line, it's the objective of almost every play, and yet you can't see it once they've zoomed in to where you can't see the chain gang on the side. Baseball, you know, where the strike zone is, where the ball crosses or misses that strike zone is important and hard to see. But sailing has more important stuff that's hard to see, even for an experienced sailor, than just about any sport. And so, you know, from the beginning of when we were doing this augmented reality technology, I was imagining what we could do for sailing, because of course it's the sport that I love. But I never imagined it would be financially possible to actually do a project like that for sailing.
To develop innovative technology, one has to be creative and find unique ways to put it all together.
Yeah, the thing that makes these things really expensive at the end of the day, even once the development is done, is just the manpower to, you know, deploy a system like that, equip the helicopter, put in the telemetry base stations, make sure all the gear on the boat works, maintain all of the gear on all of the boats, charge the batteries, and it's just, and if you have a few boats that are missing, then the system suddenly is much less effective on air and it can't really be used for umpiring and race management. So it just takes an extraordinary level of attention to have to equip a fleet of boats and to have them all work every day.
Putting trackers on large boats is one thing, but can this technology be used on, say, Olympic classes or one design classes?
The simplest thing to do would be to just build a very small, you know, 1-pound tracker that could, you know, strap to the stern or strap to the foredeck of a dinghy. It would cost a couple of several thousand dollars a piece for the trackers, but those trackers would give you, you know, a degree or two in heading and 2 centimeter position accuracy. So a dinghy regatta that was equipped with those trackers, you could use that data for, you know, by the jury for hearing protests or even for umpiring, because you'd be able to have the data to determine OCS and overlap at zone entry and so forth.
OCS means you've jumped the gun at the start or on the course side. Stan Honey is most famous for his 1st and 10 line that we see for football games and the strike zone in baseball.
The football game is actually one of the easiest systems because you don't really have to track any objects. You can spot on the screen where the ball gets placed when there is a first down to define, you know, the next first down line. Or you can even type it in if you miss the spot. And then the one thing that's tricky about football is that the field isn't flat, whereas the surface of the water, of course, is flat, given the dimensions of the race course that we're concerned with. But the football field, there's definitely a crown or a V-shaped in almost every football field so that it drains water. So that needs to be surveyed. And then because we're trying in football to create an illusion that the line is actually on the grass, in football, the viewer's eyes are extremely sensitive to any motion of the line or any keying of the line on top of the athletes. And so it's very demanding in that respect. But those are the difficult bits of football. The thing about sailing that's so difficult is everything's moving. The marks are moving, the sailboats are moving, they all have to be tracked electronically to about 2 centimeters in a saltwater environment, which is incredibly hostile to electronics. And then the cameras are moving. The cameras are on helicopters, whereas in football, the cameras are on tripods, and you can survey their location and you can measure their pan and tilt relative to the tripod. But in sailing, the cameras are on helicopters, so you have to measure the position of the helicopter to 2 centimeters, and then you have to measure the orientation of the helicopter to 1/100 of a degree. And then all of that data from all of those moving objects, the helicopter, the race boats, the marks, all has to be telemetered by radio. And then the video from the helicopters has to be telemetered by radio. And then at the broadcast compound, we put it all together. We get the video from the helicopter. We wait a fraction of a second to get the measurements of the orientation and the position of everything else. We figure out from our producer what's important based on what you're saying. And then we overlay the graphics on top of the live video. So sailing is by far the most difficult of the systems that we've done.
It's always nice to get gigs riding on some of the fastest boats in the world, like Comanche, Rambler, ABN AMRO, PlayStation, Group Bomba, Piwacket, and Alfa Romeo. Stan and his wife Sally race and cruise their Cal 40 Illusion. The boat was first owned by Bus Mossbacher, the famous 2-time America's Cup winner, and Vincent Montesano from Larchmont, New York. Illusion had a great record. Stan is a big fan of the Cal 40 and he and Sally spend as much time on the boat as they possibly can.
One of the things I was interested in doing a few years ago was shorthanded sailing. And so Sally and I raced a couple of Hawaii races double-handed, and I did the single-handed race. And a Cal 40 is a secret weapon, shorthanded, because it's so mild-mannered that you can push it really hard, and it'll keep you out of trouble and give you the time it takes to shorten sail and deal with it. And so I did really well on Cal 40. In fact, set the monohull record to Hawaii, single-handed, in a Cal 40. And it wasn't beaten until a open 60 came along years later. But I carried the spinnaker the entire way to Hawaii for 9 days straight, single-handed. And I think I was the first one to ever do that.
In 2012, Stan Honey was inducted into the National Sailing Hall of Fame for all of his accomplishments. The best thing is he still has a bright future ahead. We're going to be hearing a lot more about Stan Honey in the future. Thanks for listening to our podcast, American Sailing Stories. Please join us in the future when we talk to more great sailors. I'm Gary Jobson.